told her to try to make my life more interesting, so that was where the introduction came from. What I want to talk about this morning is just kind of a fun project that I worked on a little bit over the winter, as you'll see from some of the pictures of the rock pictures. So it's what we're calling a throwdown between silver halide and silicon photography, and I realize using that term throwdown, it gets into some of our cultural preferences and things, so I better define them, especially for the international crowd. So there is actually a formal definition, but it's an informal word, which is a performance or by a competition between rappers. And we were using it as a competition between photographic technologies. And you'll see my daughter with a little bit of inspiration for this, and a show she likes to watch on the Food Network, which also called Throwdown. That's probably where the word came from, in my influence. If you're talking about it, check out. You get those influences into our education. So, the question I was starting with was really kind of looking back in time a little bit. Is do digital photography systems produce quality comparable to good old film, or are they just more convenient and flexible? You heard a little bit already this morning about what you can do with them that it wasn't so easy to do in the past. And this is just a small, kind of informal study, as I suggested. And we could say it kind of goes to consumer snapshot and photographs, maybe a little level above that. This isn't serious professional photography, motion pictures, or anything like that. But I just want to kind of remind you that it's a look backward. And last night I was trying to put a couple more images in this talk, and I put into Google, look backward, what's an image? This is the one the person came up, so I couldn't resist doing that one. So we're looking back, and let's imagine these two were both sort of equally on the market. Would there be an image quality trade-off to do that? And actually, the inspiration did come from my daughter. She got me this book for Christmas last year, which is called Camera. It's published by the Office of Justice, and you probably can't read that there, but it's published by Eastman House. And it's just an incredible book. If you are interested in photography at all, I highly recommend it. It's basically the history of the camera and images that were made with different types of cameras. And it's a big, heavy coffee table handbook with beautiful images, but it's also very affordable, which is kind of unusual for that book. It's very valuable. So I got this book, and I was sitting on the couch with my daughter looking through it. And you know, she's kind of interested in the old technology a little bit. She's 14, so she doesn't celebrate today. And she got towards the end, but not all the way to the end, and I started saying, wow, I have that camera. So these are cameras that are in the museum. And, you know, your daughter's not very polite about such things, so it's probably old. And then we went a few more, and we thought I had that camera too, but she didn't even know I had some of these cameras. And they were upstairs in my office. She really looked at me seriously and said, could we actually make a picture of these? You know, kind of like, where's the screen out of that? But I'm like, yeah, I think we can. I think I can still get filmed, and I think we can make some images. So that kind of got us going and decided to do some comparisons. So the systems I looked at were four altogether, obviously not covering everything. Two film systems, a 35mm camera and a infrared camera, and two digital systems, the DSLR, pretty high-end camera, and her Christmas present with a little point and shoot digital camera. And obviously, as I mentioned, this doesn't cover all of by any means. So, the cameras we looked at, yes, were first off, the Hasselblad mini format, the one see. If you're particularly enamored with one of these cameras, you might want to note the color here, because this relates to the plot. So the blue light in the plots later are the Hasselblad. It's also labeled. So that's a medium format, 6x6 or 3/4 camera. It's kind of standard lens for that type of camera. And the film that I showed was Kodak's Portra 160 NC. So it's pretty high quality film, professional film. The NC refers to the natural chroma. The microserver doesn't lose the saturation very much. It's using portraiture a lot. So it's actually pretty comfortable with the digital cameras. That was camera number one. First digital camera was Nikon D2X. Pretty high-end professional digital SLR from 4 years ago, so that dates it not even by 3X. But a serious camera with a pretty serious lens. I think the retail price of this lens is something like $1,200. The camera was $5,000 4 years ago. You can buy the latest one for that. So very serious earthquake. 12.4 magnitude, it's a lot since it was second film camera from my earlier days was Nikon F3, Tango G, Nikon D2X of the 1980s. So this was the pro sort of photojournalist camera from that era. Again, I chose the same films, 35mm, the Portra 160NC, and I used the same lens. I can take my fancy new Nikon lens and put it on the old Nikon camera, so I actually use the same lens. At least that's constant between those two cameras. And then, last but not least, with the red coating, is my daughter's little Coolpix S220. It's got a 10-megapixel CCD, and I'm happy about the size of my iPhone. Not much bigger, maybe smaller, actually. Little point-and-shoot camera. It has a reputation of producing pretty noisy images from, you know, people that look at image quality. They're not horrible by any means. And when my daughter was picking out what camera she wanted, she's like, I want this one. And we, of course, looked up reviews. Well, the image quality is not that great compared to some other ones. So we want the next model. She's like, no. And we didn't understand it. I got images up online an extra wide. And I zoomed them in to show her the image quality problem. She's like, they have, how would anybody ever do that to an image? And you know, so this is perspective. This goes back to yesterday's thing. There's a different perspective out there. And she really wanted an image that's just a little bit better than her cell phone computer, probably, but on Facebook. She was never going to get anything print. So it was very different than sort of the older perspective. And what she loved about it was the color, and that it had a smile detection algorithm. So it'll take a couple of images and save the one with a better smile, and also blink detection. If your subject blinks, it'll cosplay that one. So she liked those features. So very different viewpoint. And I included this in the experiments really out of fear that it was going to be better than all the other things. And I'm happy to say it was this. So. And then I got my film. We have a photos with RT, so I was able to get the film. And okay, now I got to get it processed. So this is my favorite lab. It's around the corner from RIT. You can notice how the ground was white there. And this unfortunate sign is next to it. The building's for sale. They haven't been operating for a couple of years now, so couldn't go there to process it. And I started looking around. I could actually get film processed on campus because we have a photo school, but I couldn't get prints made for both formats. And I wanted to get scans as well. So it actually took quite a search to find a single place I could get both formats of film processed, printed, to kind of proof prints, and scanned. I wanted it all to happen once to minimize any variability. It turned out I had to send them to Hollywood. So even in Rochester, there wasn't a single place that did all those services anymore, especially on the medium format film. That was really holding us back. This is the place I used to always take my film. Sadly, it's still an empty building. So this is what I ended up doing. Sent them out to a lab in Hollywood. The name of the AI, that's in the paper. I got 4x6 or 5x5 prints, depending on the format, and had them scan for 5,000 pixel scans across the pages. Truly processing process. So the digital processing with the D2X again took a more professional workflow, processing the raw images, and I ordered prints. I ordered them through Apple's Aperture workflow. And then the ST20 I treated more like a consumer point and shoot. You can link to a photo and that send me prints. So these were printed off on a photographic paper, commercial way, kind of a typical thing. But these are slightly different processes to software. The scenes, I had a couple of scenes that were test targets, and then a few kind of CGI, you know, some flowers. I made a little high dynamic range scene. There's actually a cow hiding in the shadows here. Some of you will know I like cows. And then an outdoor scene. So not a huge variety, but a few different scenes to look at. Wanted to do some of that with Mendrick and also some psychophysics. I had to do psychophysics on all of them. This one was intended to have a very deep shadow to see if maybe one of the technologies brought out that high dynamic range a little bit better than the others. So some psychophysics, not a super detailed experiment, but just to kind of compare these things. Had them rank order. The observers rank order the four systems on all five scenes.
for three attributes: overall image quality, sharpness, and color. And I did it in a couple different ways. One was on a very nice high-quality projector. I had my 19 observers sit in a small conference room, and they had answer sheets, and I had them rank the four by themselves, and it was a bit of a calibrated setup, but basically they, well, here's the instructions. It's four images A through B, rank order them from best to worst along each attribute. So first, overall image quality, the color quality, and sharpness. They would see an array of four of them like this, that were labeled, give you quicker responses, we move on to the next image, I collect all the data. And then the second one was the prints. So in the photographic system, the prints were directly viewed optically. In the digital systems, I mentioned the process they went through. The same 19 observers, the exact same people, same cast, print order, these four in a nice G65 mm print room, lots of luminance. And I recorded the responses in that case. They called them out to me. And then I did an online experiment. Some of us over the years have talked about how we can collect some of these data online. And I used a system called Amazon Mechanical Turk. It's kind of amusing if you haven't seen it. It's basically, they call it artificial intelligence. So you set up this task that you'd like completed by a computer, essentially, but it's something that people are far better at doing than computers. And they have all these people that sign up to do the task for you for tiny amounts of money. But they do a lot of tasks. So you can evaluate web pages, things like that. So I could put up the four images and I asked them to tell me what one was best, what one was second best, and what one was worst, because I wanted to minimize the questions. There are three questions. I gave them a penny for each answer. So really cheap. And I was a little too cheap. I didn't get as many viewers as I wanted to. But I got 167 to do it within a few days. So people go in and they say, oh, task image quality. I'm curious about that. I can make 3 cents by clicking three times. Pops up. And you can put in parameters like, people will put in false questions to make sure that people aren't cheating. So I have a little bit of that to make sure that there wasn't a bad thing. But also they have their scores over time. So you can say, if only people with a 97% accuracy average or better can do your task. So that was another reason. I was very picky about who could do it. I was very cheap about how much I paid. So if I was, literally, if I was to pay 5 cents of, we call them hit, I probably would have got 1,000 observers in an hour. That's how this thing works. It's really amazing, so I encourage you to check it out if you want to get sort of that quick feedback for a lot of data. And I only asked them to do overall quality for the rank order. And again, they, about Windows came up with overall quality. So, quickly some results here. I'm showing the results averaged over the five scenes. The individual scenes are similar, of course, there'd be more noise, but just to tell the story quickly. So here's the percent of people in each rank. I didn't do a whole bunch of statistical analyses or try to get a careful scale because obviously it's a small, quick and dirty experiment here. But remember, the red bars were the nighttime D2X, the digital system. This top plot is overall image quality for the 19 observers looking at projectors. So the D2X was most of the time ranked first and then it tailed down. The two film systems were sort of in the middle. The 35 millimeter peak tier at second place. The Hasselblad medium format in third place, and then the little less than 20 was at the bottom. So you get what you pay for a little bit there. This was the color quality, similar trend. The 35 millimeter came out a little better. And then the sharpness, those top three systems were pretty much even. And then the ST20. Now these were images that were subsampled and put on the screen. So we weren't testing the ultimate resolution of these systems in the projected image, but there was still some sort of overall sharpness differences that you could see. And then the printed images, a different story. So here, for the overall quality, the one that came in first, they were pretty clean cut, first, second, third, fourth, was the 35 millimeter, then the 2 1/4, or 6x6, medium format, then the D2X, and then the ST20. So in the prints, the film came out ahead, on average, over the digital system. And that held up for color, not quite as clean cut, and for sharpness as well. Now, an advantage here in the print system is it was the good old closed system where these were direct optical prints. There was really no manipulation. Obviously, the printing machine would have some controls. So the prints did tend to look better than the ones that went through the online ordering and the color management or lack thereof and so on. So I thought that was an interesting result. And the other thing I guess I'll point out is there were people that would take any one of these images and put them in fourth place or first place. So I look at the images and I thought, well, there's no experiment here. I clearly rank them 1, 2, 3, 4, without a doubt. And I thought, okay, well, I'll ask just to see if everybody else does that. And then there were people that took number 4 and said, Mark, that's the best one. Wow, really? And these were, you know, experienced people and so on. And they, I asked them why, and they had the reasons. So that's another lesson in this experiment is what you think is clearly better or worse is not necessarily what others think. And then the online experiment, which again would be similar to the projective images, if you were digital, so we're basically looking at capture differences. The D2X came out first, and then the two film systems kind of tied in, and the other one down below. And you can see the kind of percentages. A lot of people didn't like this one, they put it fourth, but almost 15% put it first. So to give you that idea of the variability of what to me was clearly a poor image, looked like the best image to others, and vice versa. So a couple of the objectives, not strict, so I'm running out of time here, but I did a slanted edge spatial frequency response calculation, and then I was getting some free software from MITRE that they did these calculations, and they had an image quality metric too, so I thought, I'll send those through and see if it correlates. So here's the spatial frequency response. This is the Hasselblad of the portrait film. So this is of the scans, but in the scans I can see the film grain. So you get a sense that you're getting reasonable limitations. The D2X, the F3, so the film is same lens here, remember, so you get the film the sensor difference. And then the full fix, which has a lot of processing, you get some aliasing and green artifacts because it's really trying to sharpen those like, the images. And just to give you a sense, the visual limit at the distance of this target, so 60 cycles per degree is way out there. So all of these were resolving more information than your typical eye for that. And then this image quality metric is a CSF-weighted power spectrum. So it's weighted with the human contrast sensitivity function. And they've shown over the years that it's well correlated with visual judgments, basically used for aerial imaging. And here's the, I reversed the bars so high is better, so it's image dependent. So here for my palette image, the D2X is on top, and the others below. These are pretty significant differences. It's on a large scale. And overall, the targets, the D2X came out first, and the others were kind of higher. So this metric actually kind of lights some of the extra sharpening things that were in that SD20 image. So that's the one place it didn't really match the Google reloads. So to wrap up here, the high-end digital camera won, so to speak, 4 out of 5 of the assessments. But in the printed ones, the film came up first in that one. And as a lot of us like to say, the SD20, those kind of cameras could use fewer pixels and less processing to try to enhance the result afterwards. And that was kind of showing up there. And there's a neat website called 6mpixel.org. I think my colleagues in the this is one of the talks last year. And they talk about the trade-off between big pixels, which are not noisy, and little pixels, which are noisy, and there's a sort of sweet spot, which they were saying for snapshots is about 6 megapixels. And I know there's people that are using that, so it's something to monitor. And I think that would have been good for that little camera, have a sensor with fewer pixels because of the amount of limitations. And I'll wrap up here, but this is a shot I did after dark. So this is actually night, it isn't showing up very well, but those are the full moon. These are the kinds of things that people would say you can only do with film, but in fact, this one was done with the D2X, the 2-minute exposure, and the noise doesn't come out. There's noise reduction algorithm and so on. And I did another one. This is a cemetery at midnight. And I was going to make some funny joke about film being buried here, but I won't go there. I'll say thank you for your attention. I hope you enjoyed it.
The analog versus digital dynamic range and bit depth mostly. Because fit depth is a big reconsideration.
Yeah, could be. I'm not still planning that, but it's a good question. That was one reason I included that high dynamic range scene that had some objects that were really in a deep shadow, and it didn't really show up here, but those objects actually came through better on the visual SLR than they did on film. Both in looking at the negative, and I thought that was one reason I did. Well, maybe film will have that better dynamic range. My graphic exposure is the best one. And that was one reason I personally really preferred that image. It preserved some of that dynamic range without doing an HDR sequence. So it's an interesting question. And then that was a 12-bit for both of that.
Well, the linear raw format is what kills you a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas in film, you don't get that.
A couple of questions on your survey. When you look at the film system, it came out, Yale came, the Kodak guy's asking about film. It did come out higher in the printed system, and so one thing would be, if I was most interested in getting prints, that might be, and I guess one thing would be how much do prosumers want to print versus. And the other thing I'm just curious about is sensitivity on your experiment. And obviously, you can't look at a myriad of things. You pick a 160 NC, which is a low-color film, and you printed it on a Fuji paper as opposed to a Fuji film on Fuji. And I'm wondering, you make a comment, if, you know, the optical printing, it didn't, you could also do the converse that if you digitally printed the film, you know, color managed onto a professional paper, that could help also. So, care to comment on any of those things? I realize that's kind of a broad, but just there are some, you know, the sensitivity analysis type of.
Yeah, my sense is clearly there are a lot of those variables, and I wasn't in control of some of them because I was doing the processing myself. I think I could make equivalent images of either of those systems, looking at the two high end ones. So I don't think one is limiting me over the other, and that was kind of the question I started with. Is the digital really there? Is it equivalent? And I would say the answer to that is yes. And then you have the added flexibility with things like that I can make better prints than the ones I got in an automated system. In both cases, probably. So I think I wouldn't jump to a conclusion, especially from this one study, that one's clearly overtaking the other, but I would go to the conclusion